Ladies and gentlemen, thank you and welcome to Marking Out with Mike, a wrestling podcast hosted by myself, Mr. Michael Flanagan. I want to thank you for listening each and every episode. Our last episode, which was our AEW review, was our third most popular episode of all time so far. I believe it was our 10th episode that we've put out so far in this young podcasting series. We have one that has nearly 100 streams, but the podcast as a total so far through the first 10 episodes is climbing slowly but surely and is approaching the 1,000 streams mark. So I want to thank everybody who continues to listen and help this podcast grow and just support me, support my wrestling addiction, and I hope that you enjoy. As I always say, try to keep this podcast accurate. If something's a rumor, I let it be known that it's a rumor. If something is a little more definitive and is a cold, hard fact, then I let it be known that it's a fact. I do my very best to try to do some vetting before I share information on here. With things like wrestling figures, it's a lot more precise and easy to make sure that the information is accurate. But because it is a scripted business in entertainment, it is a little challenging at times to separate what's kayfabe from what's real, especially when it comes to things like injury reports and things like that. Usually I can decipher pretty well, so I do again try to keep things as close to perfect as I can. I will say, though, I believe I have made two mistakes on here. Little things like calling a wrestler by the wrong name or inverting people, saying that one wrestler went over on the other when it was actually flip-flops. So definitely not perfect, but never afraid to admit my shortcomings. So here we are, guys. Today's episode, we are going to do the review from AEW. Last Wednesday night, we, like always, got to see NXT. We got to see AEW. AEW won the ratings war once again. I still believe that they've won 50 weeks in a row, or excuse me, not in a row, but 50 total weeks, and NXT has beaten them twice. But it was going to be really challenging to beat AEW on this week because it is their anniversary, 1 year since Dynamite aired on TNT last October, and they had all four championships on the line. So it's a really challenging time. There were some great superstars that were left off the card and off the show simply because it is only a 2-hour show. And I like that they don't try to expand it to a 3-hour show like Raw does, because 3 hours is just, no matter how much of a diehard you are, even when you're like myself and you consume as much wrestling as you possibly can, be it from figure collecting and other podcasts and the weekly television product, it's very challenging to keep up on everything. And 3 hours is just too much of a chore. It's a lot to ask someone to sit through not only 3 hours of programming, but just all of the commercials that come along with it. Especially since I've started this podcast, one thing that I have done to make wrestling a little easier to consume is recording them. And I will watch them live and just kind of take it in as a fan. I don't want to ever make wrestling feel like work. I always want to keep it as a fan and enjoy what drew me into the business in the first place. And then after the fact, when I go back and I make my notes, I will watch it on DVR or Hulu, wherever I can find it. And that way I can pause it and I can also skip through the commercials, which is a really nice thing. So if you have the means to do that through streaming services, I would actually advise it. It makes it more enjoyable because sometimes, like we talked about on the last podcast, you get through a show and you're already over an hour in and you've only seen one wrestling match. So if you're a wrestling purist and you've tuned in to see pro wrestling action and not so much the soap opera dynamic, it can be a little disappointing. So I think that's one way to keep yourself from being burnt out as a fan. A lot of times we overexert ourselves. And if you could stay off social media, you could even record it and then watch it the next day so you don't even have to deal with commercials at all. I overconsume because I want to make sure that I am treating this show very analytical, and I want to make sure that I'm covering everything that there is. But that's just my take on the matter. I'm sure everybody has their way that they consume things. I know a lot of people just watch highlights. I don't even know that people watch full shows anymore. And that's kind of disappointing. I would hate to ever come to that point. But, you know, wrestling is wrestling and life is busy. If you've got children and pets and jobs and other things that distract you, no matter how much you love something, you sometimes have to put your priorities in place. And as great as wrestling is, I don't know from a fan's perspective if it can be the true number one. But let's talk a little bit about figures. There's a lot of really cool stuff hitting the market. That Rocky Johnson figure that we've seen teased by Ringside Collectibles is out, sorta. I don't know if it's supposed to be, but I am seeing on wrestling Twitter that people have found it in Target stores. So that's pretty interesting. I have been going out and hunting a little bit. I believe that today and tomorrow are probably the last day. Target usually stops their sales on Saturday nights and then restarts a new ad on Sunday. But this week they're doing various promotions in their toy department, either on their website or through their app. And one of them they're doing, spend $100 on select toy items and get $25 off. So if you buy five elite figures, you're essentially getting one for free, and then you're getting one for $5 off. It can be tough, though, to find five elites that you want in store. I'm sure there's plenty that you want, but if the store has them in stock or not is a different story. And unfortunately, obviously, you can't combine the offer across stores. It all has to be at the one location. I went to about three Targets. One of them had an amazing selection. Just nothing I really needed. I did scoop up the 24/7 Drake Maverick. I've been wanting to add a Drake Maverick to my collection, so I got that one. And there was the WWE Network version of Matt Hardy where he comes with Vanguard. So that was a cool thing to see in person. I didn't scoop it up. I do eventually need to upgrade my Matt Hardy, but it wasn't a priority for me at that time. One of the Targets was completely ravaged, just looked like a Walmart. Just the signs were on the floor and there was nothing left on the shelf. There was like a Roman Reigns and an AJ Styles, because there's always got to be an AJ Styles. And while we're on the topic of Target and WWE action figures and figures in general, I guess, one that is getting a lot of people excited, a series, is the Series 8 of the Legends line. Which is got Jake Roberts is in it, the Ultimate Warrior in his attire the night after WrestleMania, when he got inducted into the Hall of Fame, where he gives that infamous speech, and then sadly that Tuesday did pass away. I really want to get that one just for the symbolism behind it. Mr. Wonderful is in that line as well. Eddie Guerrero is in that line, and I have seen that. I've seen it in person at one store so far. I don't believe the official street date is actually until like November 1st or the 4th, somewhere here coming up early in November. And usually Target is really good about street dates. I used to work for Target for a number of years and got an inside track on how they run things. Haven't been gone for too long from the company. It has been some years though. And they're usually really on top of that stuff. Their system... little fire department action here in the background. Apologies for that. Can't control that. But they usually are really good about making sure they don't put stuff out too early. But that line's gotten out. I saw Mr. Wonderful, and I saw two versions of Jake the Snake. Or not two versions, but two figures of him. And those seem to be the ones. I think that the Ultimate Warrior and Eddie Guerrero, of course, are going to be the figures that are going to be the most sought after from that line, with Warrior being the most sought after. That's definitely the one that I want to scoop up. And I have a feeling that Mr. Wonderful is going to be the peg warmer from that line. Every line's got to have one, and unfortunately, I think it'll be him. It's a really amazing looking figure. They did a really great job on it. No criticisms. It comes with a great looking robe. The body is just chiseled and it looks amazing, but I don't know how many casual everyday Target consumers and shoppers and moms and people getting Christmas shopping started early. I don't know that Mr. Wonderful is someone who resonates. I think even casual fans that even are still new to wrestling within the past number of years, I think know who somebody like Eddie Guerrero is. Everybody knows who the Ultimate Warrior was. But I just don't know that Mr. Wonderful is going to get the respect that he deserves. And maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe that'll sell. But I think sometimes figure collectors, we can get excited. And when we go to these stores and we don't see the figures right away, we get discouraged. But that's part of the fun. You know, if you have the opportunity to purchase them online and they're absolute must-haves for you, you should do that. You should always pre-order online and guarantee your copy. But there is something magical about seeing a figure in person that maybe you didn't even know was coming out or that you've been hunting for. And there's always something a little more special about finding it in a store versus receiving it on mail call. It's exciting to get it in the mail as well, but usually it's less exciting because you know it's coming because you paid for it already and you know it's on the way. So it takes that randomness out of it. But I wouldn't get too frustrated. We do have to humble ourselves and remember that we are in a global pandemic right now. I know that that's the most overused statement, both by myself and by the consumer market in general. I know you're probably sick and tired of hearing that your local bank is out of change and your product's not in stock and things like that. But it's not BS, guys. I work in the betting industry, and I know it's annoying to hear that kind of stuff, but we have product that we used to be able to get to our customers in like 10 days or less that are in some cases taking 5 to 6 weeks. And this is a completely different industry, completely different products. And it's, you know, people give the AEW line all the grief in the world. And it sucks because I know that they're trying. I know people have their opinions of Jeremy from Wicked Cool Toys and how he likes to kind of skyrocket the market because he's very fascinated as an individual by the price points that Pokemon cards and certain stuff like that can fetch. And I do agree to a sense that it is a little annoying, but you know, he's the guy who makes it and he makes these special editions for a reason because he is excited by that kind of stuff. And they are special edition for a reason. They're going to be highly sought after. We've seen both the Jericho Chase from AEW and the Cody go for $100 to $200 on the website and then are fetching, in some cases, over $1,000 on eBay. Listen, if you want that figure that bad and you can afford it, do whatever makes you happy. I personally would probably never do that. There's always going to be that initial wave of excitement of people purchasing the items and scooping them up and causing the market to surge. But there's something that's going to happen where these people who have these figures, especially these scalpers who thought they could make a quick ticket on it, they're not going to want to sit on it and they're going to get frustrated and they're going to release it. I'm not saying that you're going to find them easily because there's only 1,500 of them total between the two action figures, but people will release them and it's the luck of the draw. If you get lucky, you might find them. There's a Backstage Brawl playset that Mattel put out 6 years ago via Kmart that I want, and the only one is $524 on eBay, and I refuse to pay that much for something that I fully intend on opening and displaying. So I'm just biding my time. I'm sitting on it. I'm waiting because somewhere in the world is some poor guy who's fallen in love right now, doesn't see it coming, and his girlfriend is going to make him sell off his action figures, and I'm going to be there. I know it sounds poachy, but if it's out there and it's on the Craigslist or Marketplace or OfferUp or these different services, there's always going to be fans like myself who are available to purchase those toys from people who are no longer able to give them the loving homes that they deserve. So, you know, keep it all in mind. These aren't excuses. No matter what you might think, the Walmart and Target employees are not sitting on the toys in the back. They're just doing their job, just like you wake up and you do your job every day and things might bother you and frustrate you. These guys are doing it, and we have to remind ourselves that we can't get upset. I used to sell Funko Pops at Target, and I absolutely hate Funko Pops because of Funko Pop collectors. The collectors, which I know are some of you because there are WWE Funkos, and even Young Bucks have Funkos and others. The disrespectful behavior by some, not all, but by some of the Funko collectors soured me on the entire line, because they would come in and in some cases we would get six. It'd be a limited edition. We'd get like 6 or 8 or 10, not very many of them. People are lining up outside the store before it opens up at 8 a.m. and they're coming in. And even when we do things to try to keep it fair, when we did things, I'm not with them anymore, but when we would do things, limit one per household and make people show the ID and make sure it wasn't like a brother and a friend or something like that, trying to collect all these things, people would still find a way. We would still sell out. And people would be rude, and they'd outright be like, "Oh, I bet you got them in the back. You're going to buy them all up after you get off, aren't you, motherfucker?" And it's like, bro, calm down. Calm down. No one wants this shit. You want this shit. I don't give a fuck about it. And we're talking about wrestling stuff, like even stuff that I cared about. I just found myself completely disenfranchised and disconnected from the Funko line in general because of how outlandish people are. Like, so you just don't be that guy. Don't be that person. Have some respect, because there's that saying, and I'm going to butcher it, that you attract... You attract more flies with honey than vinegar, something like that. Essentially, don't be sour, because if you go in, there was a guy when I worked at a Target in Ohio who was a Funko collector, and he was very respectful. He was very chill, a little bit older than me, but I kind of resonated with him and connected to him. I could see it as a wrestling collector. I could appreciate somebody who is a toy collector, even though it was a completely different series and it was something I wasn't interested in. I sensed his passion, and he would come in and he would say, "Hey, I'm looking for the Kool-Aid Man or the Tony the Tiger that came out," or whatever line it was at that time. And, I would save figures for that guy. Didn't know him from Adam. Didn't have any connection to him. Didn't have his phone number. But I knew that he was a diehard. And I knew that he was a regular. And that if a Funko came out, I knew within the first like 2 or 3 days, he would come into my store. So I would put all the rest out. And I wouldn't sell anyone, because I could have probably got fired for it. But I would hide one. I would put it in a drawer for this guy. And I would give it generally about 48 hours. If he came in, "Hey man, I was saving this one for you. Didn't know if you had any interest in it." "Oh, thanks buddy. I really appreciate that. But no, I already have it, or I'm not interested in that one," whatever his story was. And if he didn't want it, boom, it went on the shelf and it was something for somebody who was a diehard. And yeah, you could say whatever you want, that I was taking one out of circulation briefly and maybe that was a tool move and it should be first come, first serve. And we can agree to disagree on that. But the point is, he was respectful. And when I go to some of these independent toy retailers, I am respectable to them. And I tell them, like, "Hey, here's my information. You can email me, call me, whatever you want. And I'll come in and I'll buy them." And they knew and they know that I'm a regular customer, and that by calling me in, even if they don't have something I want, I'm probably going to buy something else. And people will treat you with respect, and people will hook you up if you are nice. But when you're a prick, you're turning people off from the toy line. You're turning people off from others like you, and they're not going to help you. So just a little something to kind of put it into perspective and kind of think about your actions. You really shouldn't have to be hearing a lecture from me on a toy line to know that you need to treat individuals with respect. But that's kind of where I sit on that. I love talking about toys. I love collecting toys. And if you guys love toys as well, in the past, you've heard me promoting groups that I'm a part of on Facebook. I've started a brand new Facebook group, and I would love to have you guys in it. If you are on Facebook, of course. I was a member and am a member of pretty much any wrestling group on Facebook that you could possibly imagine. Chances are I'm in there. But I noticed that a lot of admins of these groups have good intentions and they're collectors just like all of us, but they just really want to chase the numbers and they'll approve any friend request. And so when I started this group, I made a thing. So a thing we do for fun in the group is every time the group hits 100 members, I pay the shipping and everything. I pick a random member of the group and I ask them, what's a figure you want to buy? And I find that figure on Ringside Collectibles or on these various websites. And I get the individual's address privately and I mail them a toy for free. No catch, just all hooking each other up, being cool. So we do that when the group hits 100 members. And when it hits 200 and 300 and so forth, no limit. Just if one day we have a surge in members and we hit the 100 mark three times, then three different people are going to get action figures for free. $20 limit is the only rule that I have on that. And so I always encourage my members, add people, add your friends, help us grow this group together. And I did have one person in my group who I had to kick out because he was manipulating the system. He was adding fake accounts to the group. Facebook tells you this person created their account in September of 2020. I'm not going to approve accounts like that unless I've specifically talked to you and have found out you made a new account because you lost your password to your old one, or if there's some sort of legitimate reasoning, because there's all these accounts from like Pakistan and India, and some of them are real, but 99% of them are fake. And I'm not going to flood my group with fake profiles so the top will say 1.7 thousand members. I don't care about that. I would rather have a small group of very active members who are trustworthy, who are not scam artists, than to have a group that is full of just fake accounts and scammers. And that's something I pride myself on. If you come into my group, you can buy, you can sell, you can trade. And we remind people all the time, only do service through PayPal. Only use the PayPal goods and services fee. Don't ever do friends and family. You know, proceed at your own risk, be smart about it. And, you know, you can talk about wrestling, you can talk about figures, you can do whatever you want. And if there's a scam artist, we block them and we warn people. So that way, so, you know, I'm not trying to be a gatekeeper or anything like that. By no means do I control the landscape, but I can control this group. And when it comes to things that I can control, I'm going to do my very best to make sure it is the very best. So I think that we have the safest group on Facebook. And in terms of giveaways and just appreciating our fans and our friends and our members, it's the only group I'm aware of. So the idea with the group, it's called Wrestling Whereabouts. If you go on Facebook, you can search Wrestling Whereabouts. Whereabouts is all one word. You'll see it. It has a picture of the banner, which is my personal AEW collection, as well as a few random Jack Specifics and Mattels that I've mixed in there, people like Dusty Rhodes and Billy Gunn and things like that. But you can go on there and you can submit a request and I will approve it as soon as I see it. I'm very active on Facebook, so you shouldn't be waiting for that pending request, and you can join in. We're at 89 members. Once we hit 100, as I said, we will do that free giveaway. And somebody, maybe you, will win a free action figure. But the idea is I want people to go to these stores when you're at Walmart, Target, a local independent retailer, wherever you go. Use the check-in feature on Facebook. Check in to the group specifically, not your profile, and check in at Target or wherever you are. And then take a picture of what you see in terms of the wrestling action figures. Show us all the WWE stuff. If you're at Walmart, show us the Mattel and the Jazzwares AEW figures. And perfect. You don't have to save anything for anybody or hide anything or do nothing crazy like that. But the idea is if you live in New Hampshire and I happen to live nearby and I see you post something and there's a Lana action figure or there's a Liv Morgan or there's a Cody Rhodes or something that I'm after, I know where you were and I can go attempt to grab that action figure myself. It's not perfect, but hopefully it'll be helpful. Because the idea was born from people would post, oh, ain't nothing here at this Walmart today. I would see this in other groups. And I would see like a random WWE basic that I wanted. Nothing cool, $9.99, just a garbage figure to some, but it would be something I needed for my collection. And I was always like, man, one man's trash really is another person's treasure. So the idea is that you can go around and maybe help people. And then if someone does see something there and asks you to buy it and you guys work out a deal through DM where that person pays you for it and you ship it to them, then perfect. Because whatever we can do to help people build up their collections and promote community is awesome. I have a lot of future ideas planned for the group as well whenever COVID eventually goes away. So I'd love to have you guys on there. Again, it's called Wrestling Whereabouts. Hopefully you will join us on there. It's a really fun group and we'd be excited to have you. So that's enough talk about figures. We're going to move along now to the news and notes. And then of course the last half hour is going to be about Dynamite's 1 year anniversary. So I do have a couple of little random news and notes and stuff on here for you guys. Not too much, which is why I prolonged the figure talk for today. But today, Friday, October 16th, is Kenny Omega's birthday. I'm not sure how old he is, but it is his birthday. So if you follow him on Twitter, it might be nice to go on there and wish him a little happy birthday. Maybe you might see it. Maybe he'll click a little heart and you can have that notoriety in your mentions for a little bit there. WWE is reportedly a couple rumors from WWE. Again, just rumors. Don't know if they're true or not. They both seem to be true, which is why I'm bringing them up, but just wanted to give you that disclaimer and spoiler alert as well. But WWE is reportedly planning on having Big E ditch the New Day gimmick and his comedy characteristics in favor of a more serious presentation. So people have talked about him maybe going back to how he was when he first joined WWE, kind of when he was doing his thing with Dolph Ziggler. So maybe we'll see that. I don't fully expect him to go back to wearing like the Jamaican attire and using the old music that he was using, but I do expect him to get serious. I don't necessarily think that means he's going to be a heel by any means, but I think it'll be cool. There's always money in reunions in WWE, so there's an opportunity for sure in the future for him and Kofi and Xavier Woods to do a little a New Day reunion. Little kids are always going to eat that stuff up. There's always going to be merchandise that can be sold, which is really why New Day was allowed to stick together for as long as they were. Typically, WWE breaks up groups really fast, but because that group was so over with kids, it'll be back. It'll for sure be back. Maybe not to the same full scale experience that it was before, but we'll see. Just like we saw 1,000 Shield reunions, which people say that's never going to happen either, with Dean Ambrose now being Jon Moxley in AEW. And you can disagree if you want, but I think down the line, never say never in WWE. We never really thought we would see Bret Hart back in the WWE, and he came back for an extended period. I think at some point in the future, the money's going to be good. There might be a situation where Moxley is out of a AEW contract because he's older. And maybe one day he's going to be like, oh, I'm going to take a little break. How many times did we see Jericho take a break, go do some other stuff? He was out of wrestling for 2 years at one point, and then he came back. There's different things that happen, and guys pursue different stuff. He's got his interest in wrestling in Japan and things like that, so I'm not going to put a date on it. I have no idea when this would be. But at some point, even if it's way down the line after he's more or less retired from in-ring competition, those guys are friends in real life. They're going to get together. They're going to do little one-offs because WWE is always going to be able to sell t-shirts and promote that. And people are always going to buy it. For every diehard adult male fan who says, oh, it's so stupid, it's let the past be in the past, how many times did we see the Brothers of Destruction and DX reunite? there's always going to be money and stuff like that. Another rumor, which also seems to be true, is Raw Underground has pretty much been canceled. We don't think we're going to see that in the future anymore. It's probably done. It was fun for a second, but it was kind of stupid to me. Wasn't the worst idea they've ever had. I just didn't really work. And they got to put a few new guys over with it, so we'll see if it has any long-term success. But it served its purpose, and it's gone. And so who knows? Maybe that means Shane's gone from WWE again for a while, and he'll be off-screen. Or maybe he'll pop up on his screen again soon. On the AEW front, Matt Hardy has been cleared to return to action. And that would be discussed on tonight's show, or excuse me, on Wednesday night's show. And also we would find out who the assailant was that attacked him with the bat. So we'll get into that and we'll discuss that a little bit more. But Matt Hardy is able to wrestle again. He recovered from his injuries at All Out, where he took that really scary bump off the scissor lift. So let's go ahead and get on into it. We saw all four titles on the line at AEW and their Dynamite anniversary special. And the first one, we saw FTR take on Best Friends. It was the tag team title match, and it was a good match. It opened the show, and I think that really set the precedent for what was to be expected to start with a championship match. We knew with every belt being on the line that we were going to see a lot of action, and I knew we were going to kind of be in for a treat with that there, so I was really excited. I like Best Friends, and I'm excited to see what they can do. So both guys were in the rings. Roberts did his little yapper dapper thing, dapper yapper, whatever JR calls him, and he did the ring introductions for everybody. Tully Blanchard was at ringside with FTR, and the match began. FTR would target Chuck Taylor's arm throughout the match, kind of work on it. Taylor would tag in his partner later to get a break, and then Tully Blanchard would trip him at one point to give his team the advantage. They would continue to go back and forth. Both teams, at one point, it was like a DDT-palooza. A bunch of guys were hitting tornado DDTs and spike DDTs and all sorts of variations. And then at one point, Trent and Wheeler would fight into the crowd, and Trent would get tossed into Kip Sabian's arcade that he sat out there in the crowd for the last 2 weeks, and he would break it. The whole thing would fall over. The controller would break off, and so Sabian would get super pissed, and he was holding it, and he was super distressed and looked like he was about to cry, and he would send Penelope Ford to the back very urgently. She would run to the back, and then the match would continue. Taylor would return just in time to prevent FTR from doing their little code breaker finisher thing that they do. Forget what it's called. I don't even remember what it was called in WWE or AEW, but their little double team where he lifts them up and it looks like a 3D, and then he hits them with the code breaker. Really good move. Shatter Machine. That's what they called it in WWE. Forget what they call it in AEW now. But the title belts would come into play, and while the referee was distracted, FTR would hammer him in the face with the belt, and that would be enough to pick up the victory and allow FTR to retain the tag team titles. At some point, I think it's only a matter of time before Best Friends gets a championship victory. Don't know if the crowning achievement will come at a pay-per-view or sooner, but it is only a matter of time. They're over with fans. Everybody loves the hug. It's going to happen. They're good ring workers, and they deserve it. So Penelope would come back out, and she had Miro with her, which is exactly what I expected when I saw her run backstage. I actually thought that Miro would come out and would cause the disqualification, which I thought would allow Best Friends to have another opportunity later at the tag titles, but they decided to skip that because, of course, they want to build towards FTR and the Bucks. We all know we're headed to that trajectory. We would get even more validation and confirmation on that later in the show, which we will get to, but they would attack him. So I would expect that in a few more weeks, we'll probably see Miro and Sabian versus Best Friends, and that'll be a thing. Someone on Twitter put out an interesting little spreadsheet, if you can find it, where they went back and analyzed everything that's happened in Dynamite during its first year, how many matches ended by submission and pinfall and DQ, and who had the longest matches and the shortest matches, and it was very interesting. And surprisingly, there weren't a lot of non-finishes. Every match kind of did have a finish, pinfall or submission. There weren't a lot of DQs or double countouts. There were, of course, a couple of draws. But AEW does kind of give people finality to the matches. But I think a little bit of it, and this is something that I am a big AEW fan, but something that frustrates me is there's no real rules. AEW sort of lacks rules. It's not quite as renegade as ECW was, but there's been things where stuff will happen right in front of a referee. And I'm like, how's that not a count out? Or excuse me, not a count out. How's that not a disqualification? Like little stuff, maybe not weapons, but referees will like do the five count. The guy will continue to choke him out and then they don't DQ him. And so it's always a little bit interesting. I think in time, it'll finish up. I've heard enough interviews with JR on his podcast and read his books and stuff. And I know that he is not a big fan of cheapening a match by not giving the fans some sort of finality. He doesn't like when there's DQs and non-finishes and things like that. And WWE love that stuff. So I don't know how much influence and how much pull he has, but I would imagine that that's been communicated. And that might be why AEW is going that route. But at some point, there does need to be room for things to maybe be DQs. I'm not saying go buck wild with it, but definitely, you know, allow the opportunity. So next we would see, it was a spoiler alert, a squash match. So Kip Sabian and Miro, they kind of just want to establish those two, you know, the groom and his best man as a tag team and make them. So they faced a team of two individuals named Sean Maluda and Lee Johnson. And people joked on Twitter that they looked like the version of the Usos you would get if you ordered it on Wish, which they sort of did. But it was more or less a squash. Miro was dominant right away. He took down his opponent, and then eventually he would put him in the camel clutch thing, and he would win the match that way for his team. So Miro and Sabian would direct a promo at Best Friends, and they would blame them for breaking the arcade, and he said it was his most prized possession during the promo as well. So nothing extremely noteworthy, just kind of setting up that rivalry for people going forward. It didn't really highlight Kip at all. It just more or less put them over as a team and hyped up Mr. Miro, who's still pretty new to AEW. Some fans are already talking about how they're failing to push him on Twitter, but he's new. He needs time, just like a wine to ferment and get established, and eventually he will get pushed towards the top, and I think he'll be really good. So MJF teased a big announcement last week, and it was time for that announcement. So he would come out to the ring with Wardlow, and a big reveal. I was actually very curious to see what was going to happen. He had requested that Chris Jericho be out there for the announcement. So Jericho would come out, and he brought all of Inner Circle with him. And everybody had on their Inner Circle jackets, except for Sammy Guevara did not have one. And I guess these were gifts from MJF. He had bought them for them. And he said he had one for Sammy as well. And Sammy was like, I don't want to put it on. Look at it. And I thought maybe it had something on it, like in terms of a little graffiti or something. But he would put it on, and it would be revealed that it was just super big. It was way too big for him. And he was kind of embarrassed, and he didn't want to wear it. So it's kind of whatever, not really funny, but it was what it was. So Jericho was kind of getting sick of MJF. MJF was talking about how he had a six pack and he looked good for his age and 30 years. Wow, oh my, how impressive. And he talked about his hair and asked if he could touch it. And that part was kind of funny. They had some funny lines in there because MJF in some ways is sort of like a younger Chris Jericho. I'm sure that he's probably inspired by him, which is what kind of probably gave way to what they're working on here. So eventually Jericho was like, hey man, get to your point. What'd you bring me out here for? We got other stuff to work on. And MJF would struggle to say what he wanted to say. And he had some internal conflict where he would like talk to himself, but he would talk directly into mics for everybody to hear, which was kind of silly. I think he could have just mumbled to himself and got the bit over a little bit well, but not enough to nitpick at. But he would eventually reveal that he wanted to join Inner Circle. And Jericho said he had to think about it a little bit. So it was decided that the two of them would meet for a steak dinner next week on Dynamite. And the delivery was, in my opinion, funny because they discussed it as if they were discussing a great pay-per-view match. And he was like, you want to see me next week at the restaurant for dinner? You're on. And then Jericho was like, next week, I'll see you in the restaurant or something like that. And it was pretty good. I liked the way that they set it up. It was real good in my opinion. So we'll see. I think we will see MJF join the Inner Circle and then eventually those two will go at it in what should be a really good match. And that should be something exciting, something that we can look forward to. And I'm sure those two will be able to put on a real good match. So following the MJF Jericho debate or little interaction was MJF, excuse me, still kind of hung up on MJF. What I meant to say was the TNT title match, which would see Cody versus Orange Cassidy. And this was a match I was really looking forward to. I didn't really know what to expect, seeing as Cody had just won the championship the week before. So these two would get it on, and I knew it was going to be a good match. So when Orange Cassidy was first being recruited by the fans, when fans were trying to get AEW to sign him, he was overexposed. There was always every Twitter, every Facebook, any comment that AEW ever made, there was this kid. I don't know if it's numerous people or if it's just one like diehard fan that would always post the casual picture of Orange laying down nonchalant in the ring, and it would say sign Orange Cassidy. And so that got to be a little much, seeing that every single time. So I wasn't the biggest Orange Cassidy fan originally, but I will say I am definitely a big fan of his now. I even went to my local Hot Topic and got a OC shirt. So I'm fully invested. And I was crossing my fingers and hoping that he could get a victory tonight. So the match would start, and immediately they showed Darby Allin watching from the crowd. He was up in the upper deck in the seats there watching the match. And I don't know if I had missed something, but I was confused as to why he had a vested interest in this match. Figure, obviously, he wanted to be TNT champion. But they had announced later in the match that he would face whoever was the TNT champion at the next pay-per-view, which is Fight for the Fallen. So I did not know that he was number one contender. But I figure it's based on standings because it's really cool that they do offer the standings in AEW. So he's the number one contender. And, you know, we've seen him face off against Cody before, actually for that championship, if I'm not mistaken. So I knew no matter what we got, whether it was him and Orange or if it was him and Cody again, that was going to be a good match there on November 7th. So the big talk on social media before the match was talking about how Orange Cassidy had never locked up. He'd never done a collar or an elbow. He always just kind of did the nonchalant kicks and wrestled with his own very unique style. So Cody was super interested in trying to get Orange to lock up, and he tried multiple times, and Orange would counter by putting his hands in his pockets and doing typical Orange Cassidy stuff, which, if you're not an Orange Cassidy fan, might sound boring, or if you've never seen him, might sound confusing. But the guy's funny. You can go watch his highlight tapes. I think it's just different. You know, not everything in wrestling needs to be this articulated, amazing five-star match, although Cody likes to try to make all of his matches like that, and there's nothing wrong with it. If you want to put on a good show, I'll watch a good show. But sometimes the silly, if not overdone, can be good. And I like Orange. He's the right balance for me, in my opinion, of just being funny. He doesn't talk a lot, so he's able to do a lot with a very little, which is very good. He's not really over the top and crazy with pancakes and unicorn horns like New Day is, which, no disrespect to New Day, but just wanted to kind of give you an idea of how both are funny, but there's a contrast. And different strokes for different folks. There's probably stuff in wrestling that you like that I might not, and probably a lot of stuff. I like The Miz, after all, and I know a lot of people don't. So they would battle a really good match, and it would ultimately result in a time limit draw. It got pretty obvious towards the end of the match that there wasn't going to be a finish, which I was like, oh, that kind of sucks. But as I said, coming into the segment, I didn't think that Cody would lose the title on his first title defense. You figure his first time as TNT champion, he was able to beat everybody and survive all these encounters with all of these people. And then he had the epic dog collar match and everything with Brody. So it was unlikely that he was going to lose in his first week. But later in the show, they would show us that in 2 weeks, so not next week, but the following Dynamite, there was actually going to be a rematch. So now, and I don't know if this is just me being a mark, I'm thinking maybe Orange will win. Because I don't know at the pay-per-view if they want to immediately give us a rematch between Darby and Cody. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and I think they could put a good match together. But I don't know. There's not really a clear-cut story between whether it's Darby and Orange or Darby and Cody. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they paint. But I'm marking out, and I'm hoping that possibly Orange could win. I could see at some point, I don't know if it can happen all at once. I don't know if fans would accept it, but Orange and Best Friends are all a little trio. So if they all got gold at the same time, could be kind of cool. But I don't know if fans would want to see three, what quote-unquote, comedy wrestlers, as some call them. I'd be completely over with it, but, you know, it's not up to me. So it was a really good match. The following was the women's title match between Big Swole and Sheeta. It wasn't a lot of build up to that one, but I don't think there really needed to be. Just having all the championships on the line was good enough and special enough. There's been a lot of criticism about AEW's women division maybe not being the best. And I would agree. It's definitely their biggest point of improvement is needed there. But we have to remember everything that they're going up against. So you have the pandemic. So you've got Rio and some of these workers who just physically cannot even get into the U.S. Safely and I guess legally because of the travel restrictions and things that are going on. And it's a lot to ask a superstar to come in from another country and go through a 2-week quarantine, not even be on TV, and then get tested and then be on TV. So these people aren't there. Then you had Chris Statlander and Britt Baker, respectively, who will be returning next week. But both of them got injured at two different points. And those were two of the more over women on the AEW roster. So that took a lot of momentum away. You have Nyla Rose, who's a good worker, but some fans are not going to invest in her because of her background and her sexual identity, which shouldn't matter, but to some people, I could go on that, and I'm going to refrain from it because I don't want to push my own beliefs. But wrestling fans need to accept that it's the year 2020 now. There are going to be gay people in wrestling. There are going to be trans people in wrestling. It's just the world. That's how the world is. I don't know why some fans get so hung up on a person's gender identity or sexual identity, but it is what it is, and we'll leave that alone. But Nyla Rose is a good worker, so it's not necessarily that AEW lacks depth in the women's division. It's just that they haven't had all their cards on the table yet and haven't really been able to show us their hand, what they can have. So with Britt Baker coming back, hopefully Statlander will be back soon as well. And then hopefully the pandemic will end so we can get these overseas stars, not only in the women's division, but the men's as well. Guys like Pac, hopefully we can get them all back in. So Swole would offer a handshake to Sheeta, and then they would get things locked up. There would be some body blows. Swole would shove her down, and they'd start running the ropes and jumping over the top of each other. We would go to a commercial, and then when we came back, Sheeta would hit a straight jacket German suplex. Swole kicked out of that. And Jim Ross would point out that Swole's shoulders were actually never on the mat, despite the referee counting. And I'm like a dork for things like ref counts. And if the person kicks out, the ref should actually signal the timekeeper and not just randomly throw his hands in the air and say two. So hopefully positioning is something that AEW works on so it looks more legitimate. But yeah, you'll see in other wrestling promotions, the ref will slide over and put his hand under the person's shoulder before issuing the count to ensure that their shoulders actually really are down. So hopefully from a presentation standpoint, that will work out. So at one point on the outside, a chair would get set up. Swole would get hung up on the metal barricade, and then Sheeta would run and do her signature knee off the top of the chair. So it was like a diving kind of knee, and it looked really cool. But Sheeta would retain, and it was pretty simple. It wasn't too flashy. There were a couple of spots there, but just the lack of really having a depth chart that Sheeta can really work through. They're debuting a lot of people like Serena Deeb, and Anna Jay's kind of doing her thing over in Dark Order. So they're still building up the women's roster, and Sheeta's holding it down. Sheeta's holding it down for us, and she's doing a really good job. They did show a scowling Nyla Rose at one point in the crowd. So eventually we might see a rematch there. And Nyla's probably one of the more legitimate ones to challenge for the title, because Britt Baker's going to have to get built back up again before she could just jump immediately back into it, especially because they have the wins and loss records, and they're going to have to give her a couple wins before they can argue that she's a good challenger for the championship. We got the world title match next, which was a no DQ match. I don't believe that was originally announced, but the men had brawled backstage prior to their match earlier in the night, so I believe the stipulation may have been added there. So Archer did what he always does, where he beats up some poor backstage person before the match. So he did this new thing where in front of the entrance, when he comes out, was like a plate glass window with his logo on it. And he threw some backstage person. Excalibur would explain on commentary that was one of the cameramen. He threw that guy through to start the things off. So they'd start things off. Moxley would hit a clothesline. Archer would just smile at him. They would collide again. And then Moxley, off of like a pounce from Archer, would go flying. So they're making our buddy Mr. Murderhawk look really, really strong. The challenger would set up a few tables at ringside. He'd try to go for a chokeslam, but Moxie would counter that to avoid the tables. There would be a chokeslam onto two chairs later on into the match, and that would result in a near fall. Jake Roberts would later on help an ankle lock be avoided. Moxley had him in the ankle lock, and Jake Roberts, because it was no DQ, kind of helped pull Lance Archer out of the ring. And then eventually Moxley would hit his finisher. He'd get a two count out of that. So they let Archer look kind of strong by not succumbing to the paradigm shift. And then he'd hit him. He'd hit him for the blackout. And then when he went for the cover, Moxley would reverse the cover and would get the pin for the win there. So I think it's supposed to, in theory, mean the Murderhawk is still strong because he hit his finisher on Moxley, but Moxley was just a little bit smarter and a little bit quicker and rolled him up. So Eddie Kingston was on commentary. The Lucha Bros were behind him, and the three of them would enter the ring. They'd help Moxley up. Eddie would tell one of the Lucha Brothers, I believe Ray, he'd say, get his belt. He'd grab the belt, and he'd talked about how he and Mox were friends and this and that, and they would kind of hug, but Kingston would eventually hit him with a cheap shot, and he would choke him out. So that'll probably be a little filler feud. I kind of hope that's not the Fight for the Fallen match, but it might be. So we'll see what exactly goes forward there, if that's going to be our next challenger for the world title. I think, oh, you know what? So they have that number one contenders tournament. I forgot about that. So that's going to come up over the next few weeks. And of course, the finals is going to be Hangman Adam Page versus Kenny Omega. I think Omega will win that tournament. So it's an 8-man tournament. So that will be likely our challenger for Fightful of Fallen. That is going to be most likely Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley. So that'll be good. And I'm actually fully on board with a Kenny Omega title run. I think that would be perfect. So you're going to have some people who are going to cry about him possibly being a champion and Cody being a champion and EVPs. And they had set up, I glossed over it inadvertently, but they had set up earlier where Dark Order, the Young Bucks, Butcher and the Blade, and one other team, with my apologies, I'm escaping the name right now, are going to battle in a fatal four-way for the number one contendership. So the Bucks are going to likely get that fight against FTR. So you're going to have a lot of people who are going to talk about how Cody's TNT champion and Bucks and Omega are positioned at the pay-per-view to potentially be champions. And I would agree, it's a bad look to put the titles on all your executive vice presidents at the same time. I'm completely okay with those guys winning the championships at various points in their career, but at the same time, I don't think it can happen. You know, they're the best wrestlers in the world, some of the best, and they helped found this company. So the idea that they should be held back from championship opportunities is silly. Because, I mean, who doesn't want to see the Young Bucks as the tag team champions? I think they've appeased us enough in the first year by not having the Young Bucks win the championship right out of the gate. We've had two world champions, neither of them being executive vice presidents. So if the third champion turns out to be Omega and turns out to be... So if you guys have any thoughts on that, join the conversation over on Twitter. Mike S. Flanagan is my Twitter handle. I'll use any of the best comments that I get from people on the podcast. So if you ever want to make your voice heard, that's the best way to do so. But we're building towards Fight for the Fallen. This is our 11th episode, guys. Thank you for listening. We are getting ready to wrap it up. Later today, I'm going to put out our 12th episode, which will be more of the same. We'll have news and notes, anything that I didn't include in today's episode, or in this episode, as well as the NXT recap. And then it's Friday night. So if you're listening to this live, you do know that we are going to get SmackDown tonight. A lot of stuff because it's the season premiere. They wanted to build up SmackDown and make it look like a strong show. So we're going to get Lars Sullivan and Jeff Hardy and Braun Strowman. And I think that's a Universal title match against Roman Reigns. So they're going to basically have some blow-off matches. I don't expect anything to culminate or to come from that. And then the draft is done now, so guys should find their permanent homes and settle into their respective shows. So thank you again for listening. NXT recap to come later today, and then a new SmackDown episode tomorrow. If you enjoy what you hear, share it with your friends. Join us in the Facebook group for some more conversation. And until then, I'm tapping out.